This is the Oanda Podcast.
You're listening to the Oanda Market Insights podcast, where we preview and review all the big business and market stories with Oanda senior market analysts from around the world. And today it is Ed Moyer in New York. Good afternoon from London, Ed.
Hello from New York.
Great to have you on again. The big story in your part of the world, of course, is Jay Powell's semi-annual testimony to Congress. It's a two-day affair. We've hit day two, but day one is where all the action is it not?
Very much so. Day two oftentimes is a repeat. Sometimes we get some other key topics covered, but we pretty much got what I think everyone was waiting for. And Powell's assessment of the current economic situation, given the robust economic data we've seen throughout much of the economy. And I think everyone has pretty much seen the dovish commitment affirmed. The Fed has clearly stated that, you know, there will be no interest rate hikes or tapering in the foreseeable future. And that's really, I think, what markets took out of day one. The other, I think, big takeaway is that the Fed is still set on that optimism that, you know, this recovery is really going to be strong in the second half of the year. And that's where I think the markets are kind of in disagreement with Fed Chair Powell. And that's one of the reasons why we're starting to see a massive move higher in global bond yields. I think, you know, before Powell's speaking, we saw, you know, that the bond market has been fairly sold into. And right now, I think we're, you know, it's fascinating, but the 10-year yield is above 140. And that is a massive move. And I think there was kind of that expectations that Fed Chair Powell was going to start to have to address that, a surge in yields could disrupt financial conditions. And he was asked several times, you know, as about inflation and what if the economy runs hot? And he really downplayed those fears. So I think he pretty much gave a green light for Treasury yields to continue to surge. And that's what is something they will get uncomfortable if we continue to see that rally go. So I think 150 on the 10-year, which, you know, doesn't seem that far now, could be a point where I think Wall Street will start to expect to hear some more rhetoric that, you know, the Fed has more tools to address that. And one of the main reasons why is I think, you know, we earlier in the week on Monday heard from ECB Chief Lagarde, and she's, you know, noted that the ECB is closely monitoring longer term nominal yields. And I think no one wants to disrupt the global economic recovery, and specifically if these yields continue to surge, that's exactly what it will do. So I think there's a belief that the Fed will need to be tested, and that's why the move higher in yields is still going.
Yeah, and he's certainly held firm, hasn't he, in the face of suggestions that the central bank risks inflating an asset bubble by maintaining these current policies. Bond purchases and the fact that the rates are close to zero. And he said that the economy is a long way from employment and inflation goals. So he is really trying to hold firm, and he's setting his sights on full employment and an inflation target of 2%.
Very much so. And I think one of the key data points that he I think he always goes back to is that we still have 10 million still unemployed. And that is going to take a long time to get those jobs back. A lot of that is from leisure and hospitality, so a lot of that will be depend on the reopening of the economy. I think his optimism, you know, has mostly stemmed from, you know, a rather successful vaccination campaign, and I think we're constantly getting positive news on the vaccine front. It seems I think today's news, you know, with Johnson & Johnson getting the FDA staff kind of endorsement, you know, really, you know, I think raises expectations that emergency use authorization is going to be probably in the next week, and we should start to see over the next 4 weeks, you know, the J&J vaccine released. And I think that's very positive news, but not necessarily for the U.S., but for the rest of the world. The J&J vaccine is I think the big takeaway is it's a single dose and it uses basic refrigeration. So it will really be, I think, very beneficial for third world countries where they might have difficulty with some of the difficulty in with some of the earlier vaccines that require much more difficult refrigeration processes. So I think there's a lot of optimism for the U.S. economy, global economy for the rest of the year. But I think right now that you're going to see that I think Wall Street is much more optimistic that, you know, we could see a return to normal at some point in the second quarter. And that's much earlier than what the Fed is anticipating.
Which was very similar to what Prime Minister Boris Johnson indicated in his address on Monday. Now, I was thinking, actually, Ed, there is an irony that the two countries, the United States and the United Kingdom, that have been the most heavily criticized in terms of how they've dealt with the pandemic, the mortality numbers and so on, seem to be way ahead of the curve when it comes to this vaccination process. It's quite a reverse, isn't it, for both of these economies?
Very, very much so. And right now, you know, the world, you know, what will determine if you're successful or not is really vaccine rollout. And right now, you know, the U.S. and the U.K. are shining. The Eurozone has been a terrible example of showing what should be done as far as getting vaccines available to their public and getting the approval processes done. And right now, I think you're probably going to see that investors, you know, are really embracing the swift action that you saw from not just, you know, the central banks, but the governments, you know, committing billions of pounds for extra support for the economy has proven very successful. It's, you know, managed to keep the unemployment rate around 5.1%. I think, you know, once that stimulus is withdrawn, I think the furlough scheme ends, which will probably be much later this year. You know, then you'll probably see the unemployment rate jump towards 8%. But still, I think there's a lot of support right now that's going to be given to the jobs market, and I think the hardest hit parts of the from the government's lockdown are going to have that relief. And I think as you know, you get closer to herd immunity, you know, there is high hopes that, you know, this the UK economy is going to run really hot and then later this summer. And that's very optimistic for UK assets across the board.
Yes. And because of this brightening economic outlook on this side of the Atlantic and all down really to the swift vaccine rollout, the pound is now on track for its best month since last July, buoyed by a sharp rise in UK government bond yields. Looking at the numbers, near a three-year high of 142 and a bit against the dollar and 117 against the euro. That's 3% higher. So since the end of last year, the pound has strengthened more than 4% against the euro, and that does reflect on the difference in the vaccination programs. And as we saw from Boris Johnson on Monday night, they are going to open things up, even international leisure travel from June. Doesn't necessarily come soon enough for a lot of sectors who want, the Prime Minister wanted the government to go even earlier. I don't know whether that's very much the case in the United States as well, but there's more retail open in the USA compared with Britain, is there not?
Yes, and I think what you're starting to see in the U.S., it really, depending on which state you're in, will make you feel whether you're in lockdown mode or not. Florida has seen pretty much, for many, just a complete return to normalcy already. And that's why you're starting to see a little bit of an uptick here in new cases. It's still early. You know, earlier in the week, I would have said they were not being impacted by these virus mutations, the B117 strain UK. And I think what you're probably going to see is there's going to be the blue states are going to be cautious. The red states are, for the most part, it seems, a little bit more lenient or have had a an easing of some of those restrictive measures already. So I think you're going to probably see that as these vaccines continue to get rolled out, a good amount of the population already has had COVID. So I think there is that firm belief that the people who want the vaccine will have had a chance to have gotten it by April. And that should mean that people who are not going to get vaccinated are probably willing to or ready to just go about the way things used to be. And you're going to see that strong push for that return to normalcy. And that will, I think, really force the hand of governments. And you're probably going to see that is going to really boost the confidence that you're going to have most of these restrictions lifted. So I think there's optimism on both sides of the pond. But right now, I think, the UK is looking particularly bright because, for the most part, the UK was hampered by Brexit and the coronavirus. Now it looks like the pound, it's had its longest rally against the euro since the mid-2015. So I think that is a strong sign that, you're going to continue to see that outperformance until the EU really gets their situation underway. And right now, the headlines mostly it's improving, but it's not yet upbeat. So I think there's still some room here for the British pound.
Okay, let's talk about Bitcoin, Ed, one of our favorite subjects. It fell as much as a fifth yesterday, retreating from those record highs at the weekend. It dropped as low as just under $45,000. So that was a loss of about 18% on the day, a decline of almost a quarter from Sunday. And those falls after some comments from Janet Yellen, the Treasury Secretary.
Yeah, I think we're getting a steady dose of negative comments. I mean, it really started over the weekend. Peter Schiff was kind of tweeting with Elon Musk, and Musk kind of agreed that, Bitcoin seems a little bit high, and also Ethereum. And you have a couple more comments from U.S. officials highlighting, their doing their review. ECB came out with an opinion piece on crypto regulation, and you had a kind of a perfect storm of there was expectations that Bitfinex and Tether were going to reach a settlement, and what's very interesting though is that with Bitcoin, a lot of times what you can see is because everything is on the blockchain, you can see exactly when certain money is being moved around. It's very transparent. There's different ways you can go about it. But what was interesting was that earlier at the beginning of the week, there was it seemed to be a larger than amount of money being shifted to the exchanges. Now, why would you move your money to the exchanges? Typically, it's the sell. So it seems that there were a lot of big whales that kind of got ahead of that Bitfinex announcement, which I think for many people, that was a very, very important ruling or outcome. The claims were pretty significant that, Tether, one of the top five cryptocurrencies out there was covering up financial losses, potentially covering up $850 million client assets, and that the Tether is a stable coin, so it's kind of backed by the U.S. dollar, and there was claims that it wasn't fully being backed by the dollar. So I think they got fined $18.5 million, or that was the settlement that they agreed upon, and that seems more like a slap on the wrist. So it seems that, there was just a perfect tsunami of a news stream of just bearish news. And that's what really kind of, helped that bear market territory move. But I think with Bitcoin, I think there is still, this relentless interest. And today, in the last 24 hours, we've gotten endorsements from Square committing more money into buying Bitcoin. MicroStrategy committed, I think, another billion, I think, into Bitcoin with an average price just north of 50,000. So I think there's just oftentimes, when you have that, there's still a tremendous amount of loyal crypto followers. Yes, a lot of it is retail, but it is also institutional. You saw Square and MicroStrategy buy on this 20% dip. And I think you're probably going to see that demand cannot keep up with the supply, and that's why we still have it, you know, just above 49,000 right now, and it's going to remain a volatile trade. That's no one's doubting that, but I think there is still a tremendous amount of backing, and I think you're probably going to see that. You know, this won't be the last 20% dip we see this year. I think we're on the fourth one already, so it's going to be wild times for Bitcoin. But I think as you move closer to north of 50,000, you know, there's just a lot of people that are going to, I think, have short leashes, because if this rally is not sustained, they're likely to abandon ship a lot quicker. And right now, I think when you see a big move in Wall Street, and whether it's with Treasury yields, that could kind of take away some of the excitement. So if Treasury markets are very volatile here, you're going to see a lot of that institutional money just focus on that.
Okay, Ed, thanks very much for joining us this afternoon. Speak to you again soon.
Thank you, Johnny.